Seven of us recently just got back from a trip from Chile, and we just want to share a little bit about that this morning. Just to let you know, Chile is in the southern hemisphere, so while you guys were cold, we were not. It got a little chilly in the evening, but it got up to about 95 during the day. But it was a dry heat. You always hear about that? Oh, but it's a dry heat. Turns out that's a fact. Like 95 degrees, we're in the shade. The wind is blowing. Totally comfortable. Not a big deal. If you're inside where it's not, where the wind isn't blowing, really hot. So you're spending a big chunk of the afternoon outside, that kind of thing. At night, it gets nice and cool. Nights weren't as long as they are here because, again, it's summer. So those 14 hours of sunshine were very nice. We were suffering. Yeah. Oh. Oh. You don't want to hear me? You could stay and listen to me. No, I'm kidding. You don't want to do that. You do want to do that. Wow. She's like, no, I definitely don't want to listen to you. Okay. I wouldn't either. That's right. 5,000 miles away, the trip was pretty long. We stayed pretty close to the capital, Santiago. We spent most of our time in it's a city, 200,000 people, but Santiago is like 7 million people. Like half of the people that live in Chile live in Santiago. The area we spent most of our time, it was kind of like Westminster is to Baltimore. It's kind of like, I guess Westminster wouldn't be considered a suburb of Baltimore, but kind of like that. So we were in a very tight little area, but that area that we're in was most of the people in Chile. So that's what we got to experience. This is a video just kind of showing kind of the valley there. Now, this is what's a little bit odd is that the literal one day out of the 2 weeks that we were there, it was cloudy. It was like there were no clouds in the sky for 13 days. One day that we were going hiking, the temperature dropped to the 70s and cloudy overcast for us. I don't know if God did that specifically for my pale skin that I wouldn't die out there, but I appreciate that. We got seven of us that are going to come up and talk about different aspects of it. Avery, I think, is up next, and Avery is going to be talking about several things, including kind of the space that we're in, kind of the deserty area.
All right. Hi, I'm Avery. I'll be talking about my experience. Buenos dias. A little background context for me and for y'all. Towards the end of 2024, I started getting coffee with Miss Batania on Sunday mornings before church. And one day at Racer's Daughter, she asked me if I wanted to go on a missions trip to Chile. And I was like, oh my God, okay. I was really excited. I was ready to book the flight next morning. Like, I was ready to go. I was going to pack after that. She told me it'd be a year. I said, okay. But I was a little nervous because I knew I'd be speaking Spanish, but I didn't really feel confident about my level. I hadn't even finished Spanish 2 yet, so I was like, okay. And as the new year began, God gave me this like peace about my language skills, and I shifted from Duolingo to learning real life Spanish, which helped a lot. And over the next year, as our plans became clearer, my confidence grew. And the year passed very quickly, and before I knew it, I had successfully completed Spanish 4, and I was on a plane to Chile. I had never been on a plane longer than 2 hours, so traveling the 7 hours from Atlanta to Lima was a lot, but we got there safely, even with the little hiccups. When we arrived, we had breakfast at the church in Rancagua with our host families. That's the first place we stayed at Rancagua. And I knew I was staying with this girl named Sophia, who's learning English, but I didn't really know what to expect because I was a little, I was like, okay, what are we doing? And after introducing each other at the church, we instantly hit it off. Like, we're like besties from day one. I couldn't have had a better host. And she's staying over there over the summer at their house with her family, and her parents are super nice and everything. They made me feel like their own child. And the food was great, and every morning I was fed with a homemade breakfast, which Sophia got up early to make every day, like 7 in the morning, and then she went back to bed. And my favorite part of the trip was the time that we spent in Rancagua. About half the time was spent there, and the other half in Miss Betania's brother's house, right outside of Santiago City. And Miss Betania, Clay, Vincent, and I all stayed on one property in Rancagua with, like, different houses. The rest of the group stayed in different areas, but we were all close to the church. When we weren't outside by the pool at our house or enjoying the view of the Andes Mountains, we were at church with the greater community of the believers. And Clay gave a sermon or two and prayed several times. Miss Betania did a great job interpreting. And like beautiful songs like we sung up here, and prayer time was really awesome. And I definitely did feel like I was growing closer to God, but I also learned that we have to constantly recommit ourselves to God. It's not a one and done sort of thing. And we're always making mistakes, but it's by the grace of God that He forgives us. And what's important about this is that we have an uplifting community of people who helps us in our journey to getting closer to God. And I continue to feel closer to God as we moved to Santiago. The house we stayed at was beautiful, and it was a good way to wind down in the trip. They had, like, grapevines in the backyard, so me and Krista, like, read a little bit. It was nice. And I was interpreting just a little bit for Spanish, and I was nervous, but I had the confident feeling over me, which is what I prayed for all that year. And honestly, I think Miss Betania saw something in me that I didn't see in myself, and I truly believe that God guided her in choosing me for this trip. I had a really wonderful trip, and for me, I'm summarizing it with the Bible verse, my favorite one, Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Thank you.
Hello, guys. Thank you. Thank you very much. There was a meeting, apparently, for, like, what everybody was going to say today, and I did not go to that meeting, so I do not have anything prepared to say. So if this sounds very rambling, it's because it is. This will be assorted facts and opinions that I had about Chile. I wrote down what I was going to say as Avery was speaking, so please bear with me. So I'm going to be, I think what struck me the most about visiting Chile, I've been there before, but this time I think what really like stuck with me was the hospitality that was like demonstrated by the people that we spent time with. The first place that we went to, well, I was with Clay the whole time, first of all, and opinion, being Clay's bilingual assistant in a foreign country is not a fun job to have, but that's okay. We all make sacrifices. So Clay and I stayed in the same house in like on a family compound. And at the compound, it was like the house that we were at, there were three houses, and they were all like owned by siblings basically. And the house that Clay and I stayed at was like one of the siblings. And what like really like impacted me was just seeing like the time that they spent together, like with each other, like the whole family there like did everything together, and they like had meals with each other. And there was like such an emphasis on like familiarity and like partaking in like communion with other people and just like spending time with them. And I really liked that. And Jorge, which is the man who owned the house that Clay and I were with, we're staying at, he made, I think I can speak for Pastor Clay and I, that he made us feel like kings. There was like a repeated emphasis that he kept like telling us about the fact that he felt that like the Lord had given him everything that he owned, like he attributed it all to the grace of God. And he was just so happy that Clay and I were there because he felt that he could properly steward his resources and use them effectively as the Lord had given him. And he had just like such a sense of like fulfillment. And I thought that that was so admirable because, he just felt like he was finally able to like use what the Lord had given him for like the good of someone else. And that just made him so happy. And that was just amazing because like that was such a good, he was just being a really good host. And Clay said that the people there reminded him of the people from the American South. And while I've never been, I have heard that people in the South are very hospitable. So I can definitely see that connection. Then we went to help out in a ministry helped like families whose like babies basically had to undergo this surgery called spina bifida. And when we were at this house, it was like I don't even know what you would call it. It was like a house that cared for the families. But there was this older lady there. It was a middle-aged man who is like the leader of the ministry, but then his mom also worked with him at the house. And I was really amazed at the mom because she had like a movement issue, I think, with her leg, but she like she never showed it, and she always made sure that all of us were comfortable at any given moment. And she was always like making food for us. And at one moment, Clay and I were supposed to help make a dessert, and Clay messed it up. He messed up the dessert, and the lady was so gracious with him. And that I think just shows like how much of a saint she is, because I would have screamed at Clay, and she was just so gracious with him and just going with the flow. So she really made us feel like we belonged, and that was really impactful. So those were kind of my assorted thoughts. I hope you enjoyed them. I don't know who's next, but yeah, thank you.
This is an inside joke. We'll tell you later. So, let's see. Okay, so I stayed with the host family, the Vasquezes. Can y'all hear me? The Vasquezes. The father's not there. Father was Jose, and the mom is Claudia, and the daughter Allison on the left, and then the son-in-law, Claudia. Oh, that was got confusing. Claudia. And then JP is 10-year-old grandson, and they were awesome. They were so kind and giving. To echo what Vincent said about their hospitality, they made you feel like you were the most important thing going on there. And they were very giving. I made a mistake of saying, I eat 20 eggs a week, probably. And so at breakfast, there are like two bowls of eggs. And one's for me, and the rest is spread around the animal. I'm trying to share it. And they said, no, that's for you. And so they just really so hospitable, really. That's the picture of the church in Rancagua. And that's I don't know if that was breakfast or whatever, but the meals we had there.
New Year's.
That's New Year's, right. So when we got there, let me back up too. When we got there, we were up about 20 hours when we landed. And then we waited another hour for the men in the church to come get us. And then we're looking forward to going home, getting a few hours of snooze, and like, oh, no, breakfast is going to be ready in an hour. And so you saw the picture of us at BWI all like, let's go. I would have loved to have a picture of us awake 24 hours. We did not look the same. So, but we just enjoyed. They made us feel like kings and queens, really. They were just awesome. And I learned just how they prioritize people over things. I feel like over there, if you just show up at someone's house, you don't need to call first. You become the priority. Just being who you are, you're a priority, you know. And so, having spent a week with this family, we got really close. We played some games together. We went to the basketball court with JP, the 10-year-old grandson, and his dad and his uncle. we played some two-on-two. I showed him some drills, some dribbling and shooting drills. And they said that JP was teary-eyed the day after I left. So we had really gotten close. And his dad in the background came to the church for the send-off night, right? And so Clay, I introduced Clay to them through interpreter. I think Vincent might have been the interpreter. I'm not sure. But it was communicated that he had been turned off by church and church things for some reason years ago, but that he had come that evening because of spending time with me. And I thought that was such a blessing, you know? And let's see. Are there other pictures or no? That's just those two. Okay, here we are. So they have Little Caesars. That's pizza. They put corn on their pizza, which is actually quite good. And there's the whole family. Oh, there's Jose, the dad. He works in a copper mine miles down. And then he works like 8 hours, 8 days on, 8 days off. And the son-in-law works in the same copper mine, but he works opposite shifts. So I'm like, oh, you go to work. Adios. Hola. Adios. Hola. So anyways, it's hard work, but he loves his family. He was very hospitable, and I think I've hit my 5 minutes, but yeah, so thanks.
Good morning. So I'm Kelly. I went on the trip as well. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Rancagua. And there we met Nicholas, who is on the rightmost of that screen. It'd be the one person you don't recognize over there. And he is pretty amazing. He saw a need in his community. And for the last 20 years, he's been trying to meet it with just different services that he's helping to put together with his parents and his wife, which is who Vincent was referring to. He's just looking to love on his neighbors, meet the needs that they have, both physical and spiritual, but through all of this, they don't get paid for any of it. So originally, we were supposed to work at a soccer camp, which, as plans often do on mission work, they got changed because a group from California came in and they were helping with a baptism. So 15 people were baptized. On the right, that is a father and his two kids. They're both in the soccer camp, and they're two of the people who were baptized. So they went and did that. But Nicholas told us about his camp, and it is essentially for boys in Rancagua, which is downtown. Both these pictures are taken in front of their houses. So you'll notice that there's gates. That is a very common thing in Chile, to have gates in front of your houses. But this is also the inner city downtown Rancagua. So just like any other inner city, these kids are growing up with drugs and violence and abuse and poverty. So he has come in there and created a soccer camp for these kids, which a couple times a week he has to rent a field for them to play on. And really, it's just making community for them, someplace safe for them to be, some adults for them to come to. And he's been doing this for 20 years, I believe. So some of his original kids are actually the parents of the kids that he has now. So he's really made something special in the community. And I'm not really following my notes, so let's see if I missed anything. Oh, Nicholas has a dream. Many dreams, actually. But this one is to rent a building near where they live. And his goal is to make a community center where the kids can come to regularly after school. That way they can do their homework. They can just have a community that's safe away from the atmosphere that they are growing up in so that they can thrive. And really his whole goal is for them to thrive. Meals as well. So hospitality is a big part of the culture. So just feeding them, having them bond together, making those relationships. The next slide. Nicholas also runs a food program for the families, and since it was New Year, he wanted to make a hot meal for, I'm not sure how many people. No, that's the other one, the hot meals. Four families was what we distributed. Was it four families, the hot meals, too? Okay. So that seems like a lot of food. so we helped prepare the food, which was essentially being the sous chefs because we are not Chileno, and we could not cook like these ladies do. So the upper left, that's Julia, which is Nicholas's mom that Vincent was also talking about. Her and her daughter-in-law, Nicholas's wife, I don't see her in the picture, they cooked all the food. All we did was cut it up, prepare it, season it as best as they told us to, and then they took it and made it delicious. And it was cooking in this crock pot pressure cooker thing, which just filled the house. It smelled so amazing. So then they broke that into pieces and took it to the families that they were giving it to. And this was a special New Year's dinner that they were providing for them. Next slide. Here, we also helped. So food is a problem because of the poverty in Rancagua. So Nicholas, he has, over the years, gained connections with the grocery store owners. And essentially, when something is too damaged to sell, there's apparently a list that they call, and whoever comes first and can purchase it for the lower price can get it. So he is constantly going to different grocery stores, trying to pick up all of this food all the time for the families that he's helping with. So this week, he had enough for four families to get a box of food. So what we were doing was helping to separate it out. The things that were in it were like pasta and rice that it's broken, so it's leaking out. There was detergent. So off to the right, you see Jeff and Clay doing something. Essentially, there were bags of powdered detergent that were just spilling all over the place. So they were putting it into smaller bags so we could evenly put it in the four groups. So each of them would get the detergent. There was a baby, so he had diapers and formula that we were able to give to them. Toilet paper, sweets, like all of the necessary things that you would need. I'm trying to see what's in those boxes. I don't remember it all. But it was just trying very hard to take this mess of stuff and make it into evenly distributed between the four families so that all of them could get their needs met. So that is what I'm going to talk about.
All right, good morning. My name's Krista, if you don't know that. Hi, Elijah. So this is Casa Belén, which means Bethlehem House. That's the living room area. This is kind of the front of it. When we first got to the house, like you get up to this gate to the like the original property, and you open the gate and it looks like kind of like a wasteland or construction stuff. It doesn't really look like much. You drive down this little lane and then you come to this little oasis. And the Casa Belén is, can you go to the next slide? Is essentially run by Julita or Julia. She's in the picture on the right, but the lady sitting on the left. Next to her is Nicholas's wife, Chris, and then Betania, obviously. So Julita really runs the place, and she is, she was just so sweet and attentive to all of our needs. She just down to every little detail. There was always a pitcher full of water that had some lime in it with some mint leaves. And that was constantly being refreshed. Snacks on the table. People asked me what my favorite part of the trip was. Honestly, it was being warm and having food given to me 24/7. Everywhere I went, somebody's handing me food. So being treated like kings and queens, absolutely. That was amazing. But she even would put our glasses in the freezer so that they would be frosted and cold when we went to serve ourselves water. So... and my personal connection with her was I drink a lot of coffee. And so I would go to her and I'd be like, is it okay if I have some coffee? She's like, yes, I've been waiting for somebody to ask so that I could have some. So she would have some coffee with me and it was great. So she and her husband live there. They started this ministry probably about 30 years ago. They've been hosting people in their houses, that are coming from far away for treatment at the hospital. The hospital in Rancagua is a public hospital. And so it serves a lot of people from impoverished areas, and a lot of times they're coming from pretty far away, and they need a place to stay, they need food to eat, so they've been doing it out of their house. Somehow, there was a connection between this program at a hospital that Vincent mentioned, which is specific for spina bifida, and they got connected with the ministry that Nicholas was doing, and somehow were able to end up in this house. They were doing it out of their own home, and then Casa Belen became a thing. It's owned by a Chilean who lives in Canada, so they're using that space right now. It has capacity to house 14 people. They can only afford to have about 7 at a time. And while we were there, there was a family. The girl, a daughter, had been in an accident, and she was paralyzed from the waist down, I think. So they were helping to host her mom and her sister. I think there's 4 bedrooms, 2.5 bathrooms, just a really nice space for them to come to. They help the families with rides to the hospital. You can walk there. It's about a 40-minute walk, I think, a lot faster if you're driving. In this slide, we had the opportunity to meet this doctor, Edgar Corral, and he's the one in the middle with Betania there. He did a presentation for us where he explained his program. It started back in 2012. They started doing surgeries for babies in utero. If you're not familiar with spina bifida, it's a neural tube defect. And basically what it means for the baby is once they're born, they can have problems with incontinence. They often are paralyzed or have extreme difficulty walking, depending on where the defect is. And so there's a surgery that they can do while the baby's still in the womb. And essentially they open up the uterus, they do their surgery, they close the woman back up, and then they deliver, hopefully full term, usually through a C-section. And so this surgery has really amazing outcomes and can really change the quality of life of a child. There's probably about 100 cases a year that come to them, but they can only afford to do about 30 surgeries. Kids that don't have this surgery it can cost up to $1 million just in their first year of life with all their hospitalizations and all the complications that they have. So this is a really incredible surgery, and they're doing over 90% of these surgeries for free for the patients that come to them, which is really amazing. And the doctor who created this program, they don't even have a space. He does not have an office. He does a lot of this pro bono. He works with a social worker. She doesn't have her own office. They don't have their own place to do exams. They don't have their own equipment, so they're borrowing stuff from the hospital. So right now they're working on trying to get recognized by the government as an official site for doing this surgery, because the other option is going to Santiago, where it can cost probably $30,000 to have the surgery done. So obviously lots of families can't afford that. So those are just a little bit of the statistics. Still not entirely sure Nicholas's connection. He is just an incredible person. When you're talking to him and you ask about one thing, we were trying to get a handle on his finances. Like, well, how do you pay for this? Well, then he starts mentioning another program that he's doing. He's like, well, we also help these people with this, and I take these kids to a YWAM program, and we do all these things. So, when we went to the hospital after meeting with the doctor, we went on a tour. And so that's a picture on the bottom right. That room that we're in is special. It's a room for women who have lost their baby, and they're allowed to be in there with their baby until they feel like they're ready and they have, special box for them and little things, little tokens of remembrance for them. And so we prayed over the program and everything there. And while we were in that room, they gave Clay this letter. And essentially it was from the L&D. I think it was one of the head midwives wrote a letter to Clay to let us know how important Nicholas's ministry is to the people at their hospital. And so I have a feeling that he helps with way more than just women that have babies with spina bifida. I think there's a lot more going on there. And they're so thankful for what he's doing. And it was really neat to see that impact. Another thing I wanted to share from that time with we don't have a picture of the social worker up there, but after we met with the doctor and the social worker, Batanya prayed, we all prayed as a group. And I don't know if we're not 100% sure if the doctor and the social worker are believers, but we were praying and Batanya felt this tug, like she wanted to go put her arm around the social worker and give her a hug. But she's like, that would feel a little awkward in the middle of the prayer if I'm walking around to the other side. So she didn't. And she told us that. And then later she gets a message and the social worker told somebody, I can't remember who she told. Yeah. Told Nicholas. I had this strange thing during the prayer. I just felt this hug. Like it felt like somebody was hugging me. It was really weird. And so I was just so amazed by that. I think, God works in so many ways that we don't understand. And that was one of my, favorite stories from that trip, just the way that God in those little things, even when we feel like we need to do something and we don't do it, God can still work through it. And that's really beautiful. I think that's all I needed to, was there any, I didn't have another slide, right? No.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Some people have talked about the hospitality these people showed. These are the two families that I got to stay with. The first one, Jorge and Fran and his family, he is the pastor of the first church that we were a part of. And their personalities were fantastic. Like they were just very enjoyable to be around. When I got there, I almost immediately got a sinus infection. And then Vincent decided to get sick too. We're staying in the same house. We come downstairs first morning for breakfast. And, you know, we both look pretty rough. And the families have been so generous. Like, so like, what can I help you with? Can I do this for you? Whatever like that. And we're both kind of like looking pretty rough. And the wife is like, oh, the men in your group are really weak, huh? And I was like, you've got to come to Maryland. My wife's going to love you. Like, you are going to fit so good. Like, this is how they were. They were very hospitable, but so fun. I mean, they would get your jokes. You know what I'm saying? Like, they were really, I don't know, they were really earthy, like fun people. But what I was paying attention to, and this was in both locations. Second location was with, we all stayed together at the same house with Batanya's brother. And in both locations, like some people have mentioned, hospitality was at the core of it. And I was paying attention. And it wasn't just like, oh, this is how they are. Fernanda, their daughter, 15-year-old daughter, she's passing by. I'm like walking to the kitchen. She's passing by and she says, oh, hey, do you need anything? Do you need some coffee or anything like that? And the first time she did, I was like, oh, that's really nice, you know? And the second time she did, I thought, this isn't on accident. Like, she's thinking this. And I started really paying attention to everybody. And what I noticed was it wasn't just us. It wasn't like, oh, the Americans, let's make sure the Americans are okay. Like, they had this mindset, like, I was like, what's in their head right now? And it's like they were thinking, what can I do for this person? Like they were like, as they were running across other people, like what, like a discipline that they had was to just ask themselves, I wonder if there's anything that I could do for them. Like that seemed to be something that rolled through their heads. And I started imagining, like, what would it be like to live in a world where it was normal for everybody, for me and the people around me to, you know, we get up afterward and we're like talking and maybe nothing happens, but while we're talking, I'm thinking like, oh, I wonder what I could do for this person that I'm talking to. Maybe nothing comes to my head, nothing happens, but that's normal. That's like rolling in your head. Whenever you're talking to anybody, that's what it felt like. It felt like you were people who treated hospitality like a discipline, not just like something that, like, oh, it's just normal for our culture. It was like I started imagining, like, it was the way that they had decided that they could most defeat Satan. It was their spiritual act of warfare, was to ask, how can we care for each other? That's why this keeps coming up in our conversation. And to pay attention to a church focused on their spiritual life this way was really important. I hope we're able to get them back here and for them to speak to us at our church and for them to tell us some more about that, because I think we have a lot to learn. When we're with in the second house with Betania's brother, his wife Fabiola, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. You know how bad it. She speaks great English. She knows exactly how bad I am. Both of them were so wonderful. But we were driving somewhere, and this is towards the end of the trip. And I asked her. I said, "Everyone here has been so kind, so generous, like so actively generous to us. But a lot of what I see is I see gates and I see fences and I see physically it looks like." Stay out. But then when you meet people, it feels very different. And she kind of smiled and she said, well, you're getting a particular taste of Chile. Like the church that you were part of and here, it's very important to us. Like this is something that we think is very important as Christians, that this is a part of who we are, but it's not necessarily a part of who Chileans are. She said, even within our house church itself, this can become very difficult. And to hear her, it was really cool for her to just talk about, like, you know, the challenges of, like, this isn't something that's just easy to do. That's not this hospitality we're talking about. It's not like, oh, that's who they are. Like, it's hard. They make sacrifices, and there are often times where they feel like, why does it, you know, like they have to defeat the idea, like, why does it always have to be me to help out? Why? You know, why couldn't somebody else do this? And to hear her kind of like, you know, just open up about the broader Chilean culture and why they do what they do. And she wasn't complaining at all, but it was very tender, and I really appreciated that. What was really special about it, though, was the way that I saw it play out with their kids. Jorge's dad started the church when Jorge's dad was 19. And so Jorge grew up with this church, and now he's taken over being the pastor. Now his adult children are still a part of this church. You got three generations of people that have grown up in this church with this kind of mindset. I got to spend a lot of time with the teenagers. I was the one that spoke English. I also spoke English poorly, but I spoke Spanish the worst, and most of the kids were pretty good at English, and I think they were just being very kind to me. So we got to spend a lot of time together, and I was so taken. Like, I was so excited to hear their stories and to hear them talk about things. They were talking about, like, wanting to be teachers or going to the medical field, talking about their loved ones or, you know, might be getting engaged soon, you know, like, come back to the wedding. You know, it's just all this kind of, why are you waiting for a year after you graduate from college, man? I got married 4 days after college. You don't have to wait. You know, it was a lot of that kind of stuff. But so they were talking about that, but then also seeing the ethics that were handed down, seeing the faith handed down from the grandparents and Jorge's dad was still there as well. And so seeing, his faith handed down to Jorge, handed down to his kids, and seeing the same thing played out in the house church. The intentionality of pushing all of that forward to the next generation was so key. They even brought that up several times. We've done what we could with what we had, and we've manifested to the best of our ability for God's glory. And we want our kids to be able to take what they have and to be able to do that with it. There's this very strong aspiration for their kids to be better off financially, but also to be better off in terms of for their character to grow stronger and for that to be passed down. And you saw this, pride's the wrong word, but this hunger for their kids to be more than they were, and that more was Christ-like. That's the thing that made me so enjoyed being around the teenagers, because I could see the hope of that more in them. Does that make sense? Like, everybody wants more for their kids. But that more, that, like, more hospitable, more more attuned to Christ, more following Christ, more enjoying Christ, to see that hope from the parents, and I saw it showing up in the kids, was I felt like I went to school about how to be a human being by the way that these three generations were showing Christ together. That was the best part for me about the trip.
I wanted to take a moment to say thank you to all of you, because a lot of you were not able to go physically, but we felt your prayers, we felt the connection. Avery took very seriously her position. We assigned some type of responsibility inside the team. She was our journalist, so I can picture her in every ride that we have. Sometimes we were really tired, and she took her notebook and started kind of a recap the day, and gave Leslie an idea about what we were doing throughout the day for her to communicate or to pray for us. And then Allison was our social media person. She did the same in a different way, inviting people to be excited with us. So this is not possible with all of us. And I wanted to say thank you to my husband. He's amazing. A person that doesn't make you feel guilty for doing something that God put in your heart. He took great care of Dominique. He always explained to our kids that someone doing something is all of us. And that's the kingdom of God. Allison, I honor you, because that wasn't easy for you. Rachel was here. Olivia was here. That's a precious moment that you gave away without making feel guilty. That's the church in movement. So I thank you and I honor you, because that's not easy to do. Clay was a little bit miserable without you, and he spoke about you, about how beautiful, how fun you are. So a lot of people got very excited to finally get to know Allison. And a lot of the kids got really excited to get married sooner. So that speaks very highly. There's two pictures that I wanted to show you. For me, everything was more than I expected. The name Bridge Puente is just, you know, when you are a bridge, you facilitate something. You are nothing. You are just the available material. So that's me. I get excited. We make someone walk a little freely without obstacle. So this name was given by God after a lot of prayer many years ago, and finally was possible. And I see this as the church, right? Going into places not because it's cool or we want to experience a different food, but just because this concept of being the body of Christ need to be a reality. We eat with my brother. We hear their problems. Once they are in your heart, it's impossible to be not aware that they exist, that we need each other. So this is a bridge. We established the bridge. We are expecting you to walk into this bridge. The connections are more firmly than before. I keep hearing and I keep reading beautiful testimonies about our trip. I don't have time to translate all of them, but people are so excited. What is next? This is a mess. They don't understand. Why do you care? We are so far away. Like, who controlled this? And I can tell you, nobody, because this is the church of God. And it looks messy, but it's not. Somehow he has the expertise to put everyone in the right place. This Mr. John was our driver in the 3 days that we were in Santiago. And inside the van, I normally was the translator, so I had to witness things that nowhere in the program, and I love that. This man was talking to Clay about him being really little and having To go to church and having the desire to go to soccer the same day. So he was like, I remember my brother taking my soccer shoes. And then when I was with my family throughout the introduction of the church, I was there. So my mom looked at me. And when they gave instruction for the kids to go to different rooms of the church, he ran out outside the church with the shoes and went to the field soccer. And Clay was, yes! Like... So he looked at Clay like a, being a pastor because he knew being excited about him. So he kept opening his heart. And then he said that one day that pastor came to his church, to his house, and he said to his mom that he was about to go on vacation on Friday. So he was coming to collect the money for his vacation because he was not able to do it on Sunday. So that kind of destroyed his heart, his trust as a little kid. And he remembered his older brother kind of started a conversation with the pastor really angry, and he was embarrassed. Like, you don't talk to a pastor like that. So that was, he said that day we decided not to come back to church anymore. And now... telling this to a pastor driving, you know, like, that was my day. I decided not to have anything to do with regular church. And as he was speaking a little more, Clay was listening and listening. And then he said, but one day, as an adult, I felt that I need to hear the word of God, and I made a second effort, and I enter into this church, and people say hi and handle me an envelope to put money. So he cried and put the envelope and walked away. And he said, that was it. And Clay was listening. And as I was translating the presence of God and his kindness, and Clay said, I'm sorry. And for real, this shouldn't happen to you. And as he was, there was that silence, holy moment. And I feel like that was healing for Mr. John. He was so excited. He was so excited. So at the end of the day, I pictured this. He didn't say to us, but I pictured him calling his wife. That's his wife. And the wife walked out of one of the offices that she was around in Santiago downtown, and she wanted to meet that pastor. She wanted to meet the team. Like, this is so cool. And I thought at that moment, if we came for this, that was worth it, right? Like, that's the church that go into the street, that go into that conversation, that close a wound that has been for years separating someone from the Father. So everything around you, Clay, and everything around our team was about reconciliation, having very low expectation about the program, but very high expectation about fellowship and communion together. And the other slide that I have is this family. This is a friend of mine. We've been friends forever. Like, we did camps, kids camps together when we were single. When I told her that I will be in Santiago, she said, tell me the address where, like, and I tried to present it really hard. We're going to be 3 days here, like, it's going to be back and forth, but I want to be, say hi. And she follow us. She follow us from one city to the other. This is a friend that is impossible to. She follow us because she loved to have communion, to be in communion. She come from a really structured church, very famous in Chile with TV program, super heard. Still part of the traditional church because she's very respectful. And she rent a house with her family when we were in Rancagua. She followed us to Santiago. She was in all the programs. Connie and Felipe, they were in love, like, talked to us. They were practicing English. Amazing family. So this is a small example of our connections. A lot of them were really organic. A lot of them were about healing and be connected to the Father again. So why we do this? As I said before, it's easier to send the money of the airplane tickets, but this is something solid, something that people need. And as she was, she went to the last day following us to the airport, giving us the thank you. And even her husband told me, thank you for being with my wife all of this year, like, to introduce us, the church. This is something that we don't have here. And it's not that we are super cool, but we are realizing that in the movement, Sometimes we pray, God, transform me, transform myself into a more clear image of Christ, right? That doesn't happen for us to be in the same place. Sometimes we need to move into our comfort zone, right? I was really uncomfortable, and I don't like this position. They are really cool. They did everything. If I go one by one, these two will have houses to live there for free for months. everyone talk about Jeff. Jeff is amazing. He has this a gentle spirit. He's the nicest person in our team, right? Like we can in. Everyone, Vincent, even though he wasn't feeling well, every time that he has to translate, he came up. And actually, there was one day that I was really discouraged, one morning, combination of tiredness. And I saw Vincent, Mama, what is going on? And he listened and he prayed for me. And then I thought that was it. And then he even talked to Clay as a man. You know, when I saw him, like this is not a son, this is a man. How can we do it to help, you know, like moving into the next? We will all be stretched in different ways. So I really thank you because you were part of this, and hopefully we can continue this. They are asking, what else can we help in your summer camps? We now see it. This is beautiful. It's more than a congregation. It's his beautiful church being and coming alive when we are together. So, yeah.
What? You were the one, okay. Krista said a Q&A.
Yeah, Q&A.
Yeah, okay. What was that? What was that?
No music.
No, okay, no music. Yeah. So I thought you were going to cut off the Q&A. So we thought it'd be good to have a little time of Q&A if you guys had any questions about the trip. I want to say this, as I was looking at several of those pictures up there, I'm really hopeful, like several of them said they're hopefully going to be able to come up here and visit. So if you get an opportunity, you might get asked to open up your house. Those for the trip, maybe you can come up here, and then if anybody has any questions, feel free to ask them.
Talk a little bit about our missions giving to Nicholas
Moreno. Yeah. Right. Yeah, so the last 2 years we've been given to Nicholas. We gave him some money the previous 2 years. Next week we're going to be talking about our full-on missions budget for 2026, and in that we'll talk about opportunities to give there, and then possibly to help some people come up this way. Yeah. After seeing what Nicholas does, it's like, oh, we don't have enough money to help him out for all the ways that we want to be able to help. Like, what he's doing is crazy, really good stuff. But we'll talk about that next week. Any other questions?
What was that fancy picture I just saw?
Yeah, yeah. which fancy?
Krista. The dress.
Oh,
that was New Year's.
Oh, right? She rented that dress for this trip. I'm like stuffing t-shirts in my bag and stuff, and she's showing up with this bright red funny dress. I was like...
To do it. So
yeah.
It was that
she should have fancy. Any other questions?
Can you clarify the relationship with Tanya and your family?
Yeah.
Are you related to Nicholas, or that's your family's church?
Rancagua is my sister's home church. Milena and Jamil. Jamil was the... Is he in the picture, Jamil?
He is in one of them.
Yeah. Can you explain?
Jamil is her brother-in-law. Yeah. Jamil is the brother of the pastor of that church. So she somehow ish related to the pastor of the church. And the way it works there is, I found out if you listen long enough, everybody is related. It would be like, imagine three generations of Horizon, and then our kids and our grandkids all kind of like decided to get married after a while. It's like that. I mean, they're like all kind of related.
Julita, Julita is the connection. Go there.
To the church
with Nicholas.
Oh yeah. Mom. Okay. Yeah. Nicholas's mom attends that church. By the way, they all said it. She is the sweetest lady. And I mean she's that person that you would want to protect. Like, you know, the way she cares for everybody else, you want to make sure that she's cared for. She's that kind of lady. She attends that church, and as a result, we're connected to Nicholas's ministry there. So everybody, it's all about relations, like literally marriage relations. Any other questions? Yeah.
What was New Year's like in
Chile?
Oh, yeah.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. So we ate dinner at 10:30 p.m.
Yeah.
And
it was supposed to be at 8:30.
Supposed to be at 8:30 because they eat dinner later, so not 6 p.m. I got to celebrate New Year's twice. I called my sister while like half of y'all were at our New Year's our New Year's party. So I got to celebrate it twice, which was really good. Fireworks, because we were kind of downtown in Rancagua. That was fun. Some little boy, Benjamin, he's 5 years old. He was drinking some apple cider, non-alcoholic drink, and he was like partying. Remember that? He was like he was getting crazy, you know? So that was really, he was about to break dance. That was really fun. And yeah, I don't know what else.
One thing that I found out, their church does not normally do a New Year's celebration together, but because we were there, they decided to get together. It was supposed to be a worship service and dinner, and then because partially my host mom was really running behind, we ended up skipping the service part, and so we had dinner together. It was a huge long table. It was one of the pictures up there. It was a huge long table. Everyone had dishes that they shared all across the table. You could walk down and just go help yourself to stuff. And then they had a time of prayer. And in some sense, it was kind of anticlimactic because we're just all praying together. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, someone goes, Happy New Year. And we're like, oh, okay, Happy New Year. No countdown, fire, you know. Yeah, yeah.
But in Chile, generally, it's a big deal. Like, they clearly, New Year's, fireworks everywhere, and yeah.
Craig.
What Chilean meal would you like to be able to replicate here?
Like, what would that's your plan. I know, we don't have the
pictures. Our lean group, Craig, is going to do completos.
Completos? Eating in completos.
I don't know that I want to. I think I want you to be surprised at Link Group when you eat a completo. Nope. But yes, we're going to do that for Link Group this week.
When and where?
Tuesday night, my house, 6:30, completos. Good time to visit.
I was going to say I went to McDonald's twice, but...
Lame.
No.
None of the rest of us went to McDonald's.
Chilean.
Chilean meal. I said
Chilean. It's Chilean the McDonald's. Chilean McDonald's. No. We had empanadas made by Krista's sister-in-law in Santiago. That was really good.
Batania's sister.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Batania's sister-in-law. So that was really fun. And some beet salad, which Jeff really liked. Where's Jeff? Did you really like the beet salad?
I did.
Yeah, and then Clay liked it too, so that was really good. Anybody else? Okay. And the McFlurry was really good too. The McFlurry was really good.
The meals there were kind of like languid, like you'd be sitting outside, especially in the middle of the day when it's kind of like hot out, but you're kind of in the shade and you're eating outside. Some things would come out, and then those would go away, and some more food would come out, and everybody's sitting around talking. So the food, our experience at least, the meals were a big part of just getting to know each other, and the food, you know, it wasn't like spicy or anything. It wasn't like you know, like you think of like Mexican food or whatever. But it was delicious. It was excellent.
On the first night, my host mom, this relates to Jeff's story about the eggs and the serving sizes. So our host mom asked if we like ceviche. I said yes, and I actually should have known better what ceviche was. I don't really love it that much, but she made a special bowl of it without cilantro because I don't like cilantro. But we had it for dinner the first night, and my host mom and her husband and their daughter all have these cute little cups with a little bit of ceviche. And then Kelly and I get these enormous bowls full of ceviche. And that wasn't even the main course. The main course was fish and potatoes later. So I didn't make it through the whole thing, but yeah, she did. Yeah.
So I cannot eat chicken, which is a weird thing. So every place that we went, they were wonderful about it. Like my host family, that was a term of endearment for them. No pollo, no pollo. You're the no pollo girl. That's right. Yes, I am. And then the whole bigger group knew this too. So whenever we had meals, everyone together, I mean, it was never chicken. There was always an option for me every place that I went. Krista was kind of missing chicken a lot by the end of the time. Yeah, yeah, and I, yes. Sorry, Krista.
It's okay.
But they were great.
We all make sacrifices. So,
Clay, in your sermons, you've said a lot that, like, when you came to a Brister's town, one of the things that you wanted to solve was, like, loneliness. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't have a resource problem here. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you were to start Horizon in Chile, what would be the thing?
So that's, okay, what is the name of that church? It's a Familia.
Kingdom's Family.
Kingdom Family. I feel like they're doing it. Like, so this is what I was getting at. I think if I understood correctly, in these cities, they have lost that sense of like caring for your neighbor, and they have like for them the hospitality. Like, you might think of like again that idea of like when you see somebody, you're just on the street. I wonder if there's anything that I could do for them. I wonder what they need. I wonder if there's anything that I could do for this person. Like literally, just imagine just being the kind of person that everyone you come in contact with, you're not expecting that every time you'll get an answer. They weren't awkward about it, but it seemed like if there was an opportunity to do something, they noticed it and they did it, which doesn't happen on accident. You have to be thinking about that beforehand to hit those opportunities when they happen. And so I think their answer to your question is to start a church where our church is constantly asking, I wonder if there's anything that I could do for my neighbor. I wonder if there's anything that... And so they're developing a very servant-oriented mindset. I think in a culture where getting ahead and like fencing off your house and taking care of yourself is becoming more and more normal, they're thinking of like, what can I do for my neighbor? And I would say that's probably... I'm very hopeful that Jorge and a few others get to come up here and talk to us about their vision for church, because I think there's a lot that they're doing that could be, like, I'm interested in replicating some of that. Yeah, that's a good question. That was what I was looking at, was the answer to that question. Anything else?
I have a question. Real quick, on that note, our home group, in recent years, we've talked a lot about divine appointments, things that aren't on our to-do list for the day or the week. And I feel it down there. Here, we can remind ourselves, oh, yeah, because this happened, I'm running into these people I'm going to have interaction with them. I can do something for them or listen to a need they might have that maybe they need to express and share with somebody. But the feeling down there is that's more the norm. They're like, it's almost like throughout their day, they're expecting to run into people that they can be a blessing to, you know. It's not like so much this is on my to-do list for the day. That's the feeling I got. So
yeah.
So was there a need that they had that you felt like you met while you were there?
No.
Yeah.
No, I think that they were doing, I think they, everything that they're doing, they do it better than we can. Like, there wasn't a way for us to improve what they're doing. Like, we were going there to learn. But I will say this, I do think that they, like somebody was, I think Vincent brought this up. I think the opportunity to be hospitable, to use their resources for us, and I don't think this might sound weird, but we're not in their context. And so we're seeing them through different eyes and we're amazed by what they're doing. And I think some of what we did was just what we did for them was to be appreciative of them. Like, there's something about people that, like, some people from America coming down there and being a part of these small churches. It's not like some, you know, they're not online or whatever. It's just the relationships that we're going. And we were genuinely amazed by what they were doing. And I do think that they got value in that. I think there's something good about, like they're in the grind every day. For somebody to come and see with open eyes and be like, wow, that's really cool that you do that. And to hear that, I think that was something that was good.
In the same line, I think we were a reminder to them. a lot of the time that we prayed together, and people were being reminded of what it looks like to be a family in Christ. So they have some words specifically as a church that they've been forgetting, and they express that gratitude about us being a prophetic figure to be the church, to be remind us that we need to move, and inside the movement, inside to be in the mindset to be uncomfortable. They knew how uncomfortable it was for our team not to speak the language. So a lot of the things that we did and shared together remind them about them not forgetting the DNA in Christ as a family. That was something that they mentioned several times. I wanted to say something that...
Now, we'll talk about this some next week, but what Nicholas is doing down there, one thing he needs is money. And so we're going to be trying to figure out how we can use our missions budget, maybe do some fundraisers or whatever. He's doing some stuff that really just does require some external resources to see through. So that's one way that I hope that we are going to be able to do that normal, like, what do we do to help? Money helps. So that's kind of a crass answer to the question. Is that it? All right, great. Thanks, guys. Krista said we are not doing any music at the end, so you don't need this back. But let's go ahead and pray. Father God, we love you. Thank you for this opportunity to share with our home family about the family that we got the opportunity to get to know. Lord, they were lovely and easy to love, and we do love them. God, I pray for them this morning as they are just living normal lives, Lord, that for us, it felt very special to be in the middle of it. But today, it's just normal for them. God, I pray that they recognize how special and beautiful they are in the midst of their community. And God, for us as well, Lord, as we live out an expression of your love in our world, it's mundane, but it's beautiful to you because we're following you in the middle of our world too. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.